among the accomplishments was they set up their own malchus, and the enemy was driven out, and peace and prosperity and freedom were brought to the land. Marvelous. Great. Fine. What was the fight all about? What was the fight all about? So you read the Gemaras, other Makaros, Midrashim. The clash was, of course, between the Misyavnim and the Misyahadim, the Yehudim and the Misyavnim, the Hellenists and the Jews who wanted to preserve the Masorah. What was the Machlekes? What was the Machlekes? You mean it's Lundas? Very beautiful essay by Samson Raphael Hirsch in the volume Judaism Eternal on Rome, Greece, and Jerusalem. Beautiful essay. If I had it, I would have brought it in and just read it to you. It's so beautiful. I didn't have it, so mail it also for another time. Okay. I can't be saved on the library. It's here. At any rate, yeah. What's the what was their machlekes? The Hellenists held that Judaism was narrow, a narrow faith. It was a restrictive faith. It lacked universality. It was too nationalistic. It was too opinionated. It was intolerant. And basically, what did the Hellenists want to do? They wanted to acculturate Judaism and have it fit in with, in other words, it was not the purpose of Jews per se assimilating and disappearing as Jews, but that Judaism and the Jewish people should take a more, you know, worldly, cultural character. You know, that the Greeks in ancient times considered the Jews to be very lazy people. They didn't work on Shabbos. It was with business, you know. Like, in other words, the Jews were hated, as Chazal say, Mishinitna Torah b'Sinai, Yorgo Sino Lielam. The Jews were hated because the Jews were cliquish. They weren't friendly. They weren't, like Mu'urav Ben Abriyais. Right? So the function of the Hellenists was to, of course, acculturate the Jewish people, its religion, its nation, to make them fit in. And then, the France for the Frenchmen, Jews for Jewland, and that's it. Make them a nation like all nations. That was the show. That was, are the Jews to retain their strict, very special, unique character, or are they just to become a variation on a cultural people like other peoples? That was the Machlekes. Well, it's not much of a Machlekes, right? The only problem was what to do about it. The Machlekes was no Machlekes. You know, like jokesters always say, why don't Jews convert to Christianity? After all, it's a principle of Acharav Lahates. Principle of Acharav Lahates, you should convert to Christianity. So the response to that is Parshat. The halacha of Rav is halacha when there's a suffix. When there's a suffix, you follow Rav. If there is no suffix, there's nothing to follow. There's no suffix here. What's there to follow? So in other words, in terms of, it wasn't much of a machlekes, really. From the traditional Jewish point of view, no machlekes. What did they do? It was a question of milchama. And in those days, of course, the milchama took on the character of an actual physical struggle. Physical struggle, and by dint of great devotion, and the Ramban refers to the Chashmonaim as, Chasidei Elyon. Of course, when you read the history books of these by a Sheni period, the victory of the Maccabees, you talk about the Hasmonean dynasty and all the characters that were in it and so forth, but the early Chashmonaim, as the Ramban describes, were Chasidei Elyon, they were a miucha bin miutim. It appears that the Hellenistic philosophy was quite dominant in Eretz Yisrael. There were basically small groups that held steadfastly to Torah. Yet, they initiated a physical struggle and won. And to do something like that, of course, requires, it's chassidus of the on the highest level. It's chassidus, it's kanois, it's everything on the highest level. Okay, fine. Now, that was the problem. Now, I want to describe a phenomenon that is taking place in modern Jewish life. Modern Jewish life, say, you know, past 100 or 200 years, and it's progressing that way. Interesting phenomenon. I'm going to first tell you a few cute stories to point it out, and then, just for purposes of dramatization, and then develop a thesis, because there are enough statistics to support this phenomenon. I imagine the Hashmonaim took statistics, too, to determine that Hellenism was gaining a strong foothold in the country. Maybe they didn't have to take statistics. It was, you know, trivially obvious. But at any rate, it's a phenomenon. You may know, my wife is a social worker. She works in a psychiatric center in Bensonhurst. And of course, in this particular mental health clinic, there she has a number of co-workers. A few psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers. A chabura. You want to call it a chabura of sorts. So I guess my wife has the role of being chvesa, a messenger to the nations there, chvesa. Bunch of goyim there. But what kind of goyim? Very interesting. The core of the group are made up of Jews and goyim, with the Jews married to goyim, the Jews who are in the group married to goyim, and the goyim in the group married to Jews. And in fact, there were recent statistics to the effect that intermarriage has reached almost 50%. They were predicting this 20, 30 years ago when it was only 15, 20%. It has reached already 50%, but that's not what I'm talking about. Assimilation, you've heard this Russia before. I'm going to point to something else. So, obviously, assimilation is rampant. It's clear. But there's one girl in the group, one lady in the group, who's married, who named Sherry. She's Jewish. Her husband's a guy. So she tells my wife that she's lighting Hanukkah candles. She's lighting Hanukkah candles. In fact, the Hanukkah menorah she's using is the Hanukkah menorah she got from her grandmother, who's still alive but doesn't want to use a regular fire. She's afraid she'll start a fire, so she's using an electric menorah. So anyway, this lady, young lady Sherry, is using the regular menorah with candles, maybe oil for all I know. Yeah, okay. So she was telling my wife, she doesn't know why she's doing it, but there's a certain inner urge to do it. And that's why she's doing it. In fact, she asked my wife for a transliteration of the brachas and a little idea of what Chanukah is about. In fact, she also added that one of her subconscious reasons for doing it is that when she's going to have, hopefully she'll have children, she definitely wants to bring them up as Jews. Well, Al Pidin, they will be Jewish, of course. Assuming she's Jewish, but no one knows today. Everything's getting lost. But anyway, so all right, we'll assume she's Jewish. Yeah. So she wants to bring them up Jewishly, and she's doing this now so that her husband shouldn't say, when she wants to send maybe her child to a Talmud Torah, my hi, what's this? So start the propaganda early. Okay? Wait a second. Very important. I'm sure this is a very commonplace experience. In fact, the same statistical report that spoke of the fact that there's nearly 50% intermarriages at this point already, great numbers of them are identifying with Judaism. So this should make us all happy. All happy. Okay. There's another fellow in the group. His name is, guess what name he has? Glot. His name is Glot. Kenneth Glot, his name is. All right. Glot. That's his last name. Glot. Glot. So one person once told him, he said, well, I think that means smooth. So somebody told him, no, it also means slippery. But anyway, his name is Glot. So he's also Vaitavek. But he knows Jewish jokes. He tells my wife a lot of Jewish jokes. And he's married to a Shiksa, by the way. He's married to a Shiksa. And all the whole thing place is intermarried. In fact, there's one woman who's married to a Jew. But there's an explanation for that. She's over 50. And she's from the previous generation, and her son's married to a Shiksa. So that has a Hezra too. And there are one or two people who are divorced, so we can't bring any riots. Okay? No, serious business. Serious business. It's no joke, because it hits all families. It's a Makas Medina. So the Maisa is, so what has happened? So he was telling my wife some jokes. Good Jewish jokes. Yeah. And then there was one of the Shiksas in the group didn't understand the joke. So the fellow says to me, Goyish a cup. Goyish a cup. All right. Now, here we have a phenomenon where the leaving Judaism, see, in times gone by, when the assimilation took place, there was an abhorrence to their Jewishness. They felt abhorrent. They rejected their Jewishness. They just wanted to disappear. So what kind of assimilation was going on? I want to analyze two types of assimilation. So the historical assimilation of the Jew leaving the fold was he wanted to forget himself as a Jew. He just wanted to leave it and goodbye. He changed his name. He changed his location. He changed everything and just disappeared. All right? Intermarried, got lost, and that's it. So I remember Dr. Grinstein told us that, this is from American history, of all the founding members of Temple Emmanuel, you know, the Bavusta Migdosh Miat, down on Fifth Avenue, of all the founding members, not one is left in their Kehillah Kadesha. Not one is left. They're all gone. They all assimilated. So the assimilation that developed then was an assimilation in which individuals, large groups of the Jewish people simply disappeared. And that's a major tragedy. If one Jew disappears, it's a major tragedy. And if large groups disappeared, there were major tragedies. But that was an assimilation that I call a quantitative assimilation. Whatever Jews were left, they were Jews. The Jews that were left were Jews. They represented what Yiddishkeit was, and whether Klal Yisrael represents, whether they're 10 million, 2 million, 100,000, Ki Atem HaMiat is immaterial in terms of the preservation and the Mesorah of Yiddishkeit. That it represents a tragedy to Klal Yisrael, that it represents a tragedy to the people, is of course a stark tragedy. But in terms of the Mesorah of Klal Yisrael, nothing was endangered really. The Jews, you know, they report that there was a time, when was it, in the 17th century, when they recorded maybe in the world a couple of 100,000 Jews, and that's all. So in other words, if we're worried about Judaism surviving because we only have 5 million and we should have had 15 million or 20 million, it's all true in terms of the tragedy of it. But in terms of the Mesorah of it, the Mesorah is there. As many as we are, as few as we are. What's happening is this, and this is unfortunately a problem that's occurring both in America and in Eretz Yisrael. The problem is where Jews are assimilating with Goyim, but not in an effort to lose their Jewish identification, their Jewish identification they want to keep. In fact, many goyim, as I'm pointing out from these instances, want to identify Jewishly too. The husbands, the wives, very often, well, they're interested. As one of my wife's co-workers said to her, there is nothing in Judaism, except, you know, like the laws that are hard to observe, but philosophically, there is nothing in Judaism that's abhorrent. Nothing in Judaism, really, it's an ideal religion. When you come to something like Christianity, you've got to get involved with the Trinity, with the Holy Ghost, with the Virgin Mary, with a Yashka that's here and in heaven. I mean, the notions and the ideas and the dogma, you got to go out of your mind. The famous French physicist, mathematician, philosopher Pascal, who, by the way, was a very frum Catholic, said, was complaining about the Catholics who in his time were tending to deprecate the faith. So he told them, listen, if you people want to cut out the dogma, you might as well become Jews. Maybe some said, "Ein Achinami," I don't know. But Lemaise, in other words, if you want a faith, of course, a person's not going to operate with the idea of faith without a God, that's another parsha. But in terms of a faith, of a providential God, of a relationship, of meaning to life, Judaism actually is really the most attractive religion there is. No question about it. I mean, I'm speaking not as a personal, you know, that's what people say. It's really a very attractive religion. So what is happening is that many Jews who are forsaking Torah, because they're looking at it in terms of, well, Jewish culture, Jewish tradition, there's one guy said to my wife, in fact, I remember another Mises cute story, the nephew who lived in New Jersey. So he attended the high school there, and he was graduated valedictorian from the class. How many Jews were in there in the whole school? So one Gentile, one Christian woman says to my brother, yeah, the Hebrews, superior race, you know, like the Hebrews, you know. Whatever the theories are, you see, there's a great tradition. Judaism represents something great culturally. And as someone said, doesn't Christianity represent something culturally? So someone once said, the Mises, what's good in Christianity, they stole from the Jews, and the rest is no good. You see, so Mimele, and I was amazed, even the great quote from Matthew, you know, and the meek shall inherit the earth. Yeah, it's a pasuk in Tehillim. V'anavim yirshu aretz. I mean, really, you go through it, anything, it's, they weren't mechadish anything, except some shtusim. So the mice is, so there's a great cultural tradition, and people today, especially today, you know, the people have lost their roots, they're looking for something. So if they can identify, as long as they don't have to work too hard at it, you know, they can identify with Jewishness. So what's happening is we are experiencing a qualitative assimilation. Not so much that people are just disappearing, are being severed from the people. What happened is there's an invasion in such a manner that Judaism is rapidly becoming identified as a national culture, as a nationality with their particular culture, a better culture than the French, let's say. It's not wine, women, and song. It's, I don't know, we'll make up something else. Profits, justice, and social justice. I don't know, you know, something like that. All right? FETS. So what's happening is, well, of course, you have to throw in the bagels and lox, too. I mean, that goes in also, Jewish foods. And people are losing their ability to recognize to recognize, pashut to recognize, what is Judaism anymore. You know, of course, these famous cases in Eretz Yisrael, the Shalit case, where what's happening? The halacha says a Jew is a Jew. But the government said all Jews who want to return. Now, that's a secular law, all Jews who want to return. Now, that's a secular law by a government that operates with secular laws. They use the word Jew. Now, I don't expect them, the truth of the matter is, I don't expect them to define Jew al pi halacha. Why should I expect them to do it? It would be nice, but why should I expect them to do it? They're operating with a secular law. Now, if you operate with a secular law, you operate with secular definitions. For example, an Arab is an Israeli. He can be an Israeli citizen, right? So now, in other words, an Arab can be an Israeli. Why? Because the word Israeli is used in a secular political sense. So you see what's happening to the word Yisrael. The Shem Yisrael is not identified with what in our minds of. What's Yisrael? Kisorisa, Imanoshim Elokim Vatuchal. The Shem Yisrael, it's a qualitative assimilation. It's an assimilation of Torah values that are going out the window. You take the name Jew. The word Jew historically is Jew. You know, even more so in a sense than Yisrael. Because the Shem Yehudi went through Golusin. You see, the Shem Yisrael is, of course, the classical biblical Shem. But the Shem Yehudi is the title that went through historically because of Shevet Yehuda surviving the first Golus. Right. So what's happening is, so who is a Jew? So Shalit's wife is a Jew. She's a Scot, the daughter of some Scottish minister, I think. But she's identifying with the fate of the Jewish people, with their traditions, with their Messiah, with their art, with their who knows what. Okay? So she's going to be identified as a Jew, you see. So what's happening to the Shem of Jew Yisrael? It's gradually being diluted, right? And in this manner, the people then become identified as a national grouping, as a national grouping, all right? This is, I think, the great calamity that we face. And in a sense, it's very similar to what existed in the times of the Hashmonaim. In other words, in terms of the Misyavnim were aiming to produce a what? A Jewish culture, a Jewish people identified with a Jewish culture and a Jewish land. And that is, unfortunately, the circumstances that are developing today. The truth of the matter is, it existed in Eretz Mitzrayim too. Chazal say that roiv of the people were roiv de'avei desarah. In fact, according to the Rambam in Shmos, the Rambam says in Shmos, even the Zakenim who asked didn't know who the Ribbono Shel'olam was. They lost contact. I'll say, all right, there were Yechidim, there were Nevi'im, there was Shevet Levi, and so forth. So in other words, we have had in our history periods like then, times of Hashemarim, we have it today, periods where you have a large spectrum of the Jewish people only really identified nationally, not Torah-wise. And you have a very small group that is preserving the Masorah. And the problem is now, today, this becomes a problem. Because as long as you have a strictly quantitative assimilation, then the Klal Yisrael that is here is preserving the Masorah. But when you have a situation where 80%, 90% of people who identify themselves Jewishly only do so in a nationalistic, cultural sense, and you have the 10% or 15% of Jews who are preserving the Masorah of Torah, so there's a life struggle going on between these two groupings. This is the so-called cultural struggle in Eretz Yisrael, and it goes on in America too. There's a cultural struggle that is gripping to what is going to be Koveya, the Shem of Am Yisrael. This is a kind of a life and death struggle to define what Am Yisrael is. This is the struggle that the Chashmonaim had, and that's the struggle that we have today. Now, how does one react? So the mice is this. When the attack was made in a forceful way, let's say, in the times of the Chashmonaim, effort at force was being made, then you have to react with force. Almost none of this is being done by force. It's a certain cultural milieu that is developed, and you cannot fight it by force of arms. This is the really great dilemma that we have today. Basically, we are in a mechamah to define the character of Am Yisrael. This is the great problem. Now, how do you do it? I wish I knew. Mice is this. First of all, that's a Mashiach dafkum. Rebbeinu Shlom has to help us out. Because the mice, how did the Jews get out of Mitzrayim? Mashiach came. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Mashiach. Right? What happened? There were certain Chashmonaim. There was Matisyahu Banov. Who is it attributed to? To a Mashiach character, to a Mashiach personality. So Bemis, what we need is, we need a Mashiach personality. Whether it's the ultimate Mashiach ben David, or it's an earlier Mashiach, we need a Mashiach. Because as long as you operate in a disparate sort of way, you can't fight. You have to join a struggle, you have to be organized, and you have to have a leader to join any struggle. And we don't have that, Bizman Azeh. We just don't have it. We have Gainim, Gedailim, Manhigim, and so forth. We don't have a Mashiach character to fight this kind of Muhammad. This is, of course, our great dilemma, and that's why I cannot provide you with a solution, because that's what we need. However, what is necessary, though, is a holding action. A holding action is necessary that we may not be able to indoctrinate them, although wherever we can, we should try. But we have to preserve ourselves, because we are gradually in the process, whether we realize it or not, in the danger of being engulfed in this very forceful qualitative assimilation. I have to tell you a cute story. Some of my Zionist students here will be angry at me for this story, but the story is about a Zionist himself, so you'll accept it. I have a friend, in fact, I won't mention his name. Some of you may know him, so look curious at it. Anyway, he, student in the yeshiva, fine rab, everything. He wanted to settle in Eretz Yisrael, and he stuck his tremendous chayvei tzion. So he settled in Eretz Yisrael, lives in Yerushalayim, fine, prospering, he's doing well, great guy, fine. So when I was in Eretz Yisrael last year, he tells me the following story. He lives on Chveis, one of the streets. I think it's Rehov Chaim Berlin. I think there's a street in Rehavia, Rehov Chaim Berlin. Okay, fine, nice street. So I asked him, how come you moved here? Why don't you move any other place? So he says, I was going to move to another street, and I could have gotten a home on that street for, did he say, $10,000 less or 10,000 pounds less? I don't remember. But I didn't want to move on that street. You know why? Because the name of the street was Rehov Chernichovsky. Chernichan, he was a famous maskil. He says, I didn't move to Eretz Yisrael to live on Rehov Chernichovsky. What am I telling you? Tell you the truth, I would have lived on Rehov Chernichovsky. I just want to show you, person has a hargoshe, a realization, so that he doesn't want to be influenced. Because the entire society, whether we're here in America or in Eretz Yisrael, the society is gearing itself to this assimilated view of Kol Yisrael, to the assimilated view of Am Yisrael. And what we have to do, as another Rav told me a cute story once, yeah, I guess this is storytelling time, told me a cute story says, well, I should tell this in Yiddish, but what can I do? I'll tell him. I can. It says, he was talking about the times whether we need Rabbanim to go out all over America to be Rabbanim. So someone told him once, yeah, you can't do anything out there anyway. You go out there, you convert one person, and you yourself assimilate. You know, I mean, what can you do? Maybe you can, you're not going to make them better Jews. Maybe, all right, they'll come to shul. What can you do? He said as follows. He says, Pashtachesh, you're not going to do anything. But your being there may possibly hold off assimilation for one more generation. One more generation. But one more generation, Mashiach can come. You say, so Mimei Zazai, if you don't hold off that assimilation, Mashiach won't have anyone to come to because he's not coming to the Gaia. But if you hold off assimilation for one generation, he'll have someone to come to. Sounds facetious, but there's validity to it. In other words, we may not be in a position of strength organizationally and perhaps inspirationally and devotionally to put our stamp and to hold the Melchama, but we should have the ability to define ourselves and preserve ourselves, you see. In fact, I just want to end up, I'll end up with one little shtickle in the Alanisim. It says in the Alanisim, you know, Tmeim biyad Taharim, Rabim biyad Miatim. Fine. Then it says finally, the Zaydim biyad Iske Sorisecha. What are Zaydim? Grandfathers. What are Zaydim? Mezidim. What does that mean? Now how does it contrast Zaydim with Oske Sarasecha? What's the contrast? I know, Tamei Tahar, Rabbi Miatim, Gibarim Chalashim, yeah. I mean, what Zaydim, Oske Sarasecha? What's the opposition here? If you look in Tanakh, the word Yazid, Nazid, has to do with a kind of, what should I say, it's a kind of vigorous kind of movement, boiling passion movement, passion basically. Hazodeh is Yazid Alish Ariel Lahargay Barman, passion. Zaydim represent people who are people of passion, all right? Oh, so the mice is this. The effort at assimilating Klal Yisrael to be a strictly cultural national mahus is the product of passion, really. It's the product of passion because then you can live the good life. You can have your art, you can have your theater, you can have all your pleasure with the cultural endowments, you know, and the cultural past of Judaism giving it a Hechsher Stempel, but you have, can satisfy your passions, right? The Jews who preserve Misora are not Zaydim. They're not committed to passion as the thesis of the human experience. With a Jewish garb on it. They're committed to Shmiras HaTorah and Avodas Hashem. That is their commitment. But how do you prevent being engulfed by passion? Passion everyone has. The only way it can be, you know, withstood is by the nature of one's conduct. Being an Oseg Torah Secha, through Hisaspus in Torah, the person can, having a Torah spiritual existence, will push away, if not change, the milieu of passion in a person's life experience. So it seems to me that without a Mashiach personality to work with, I think it behooves us that we operate as Oske Sarasech and preserve ourselves. And wherever we can, influence others. But make sure we preserve ourselves. It sounds awfully selfish. But there's a simple principle that Rabbi Akiva announced a long time ago. Chayacha kaidmin l'chaye chavercha. You have to preserve yourselves. And in this particular case, it's not just the question of preserving yourselves. It's a question of preserving Judaism. If you can do that, then whatever you can, affect others. But make sure that the structure and the shape of Judaism is not being destroyed within you. And then, of course, like all Darshanim end up with Bias HaMashiach, the Bias HaGael, will be Zechet to Mosarta Zaydim Biyados Kesor Secha. Okay. Well done.